Hello.
Joanne?
Hi.
Hi, it's Lisa.
How are you?
I'm good.
So happy we get to speak today. Thank you
yes.
for making time.
Of course. Yes, today is like the first actual warm day. I'm very excited. I'm going to finally get to put my plants in the ground. It's been so cold here. It's crazy.
We've had some sleet and snow, I know.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. And Saturday it snowed like several times, and we were cutting a hole in the roof because we're installing a dormer window on the second floor, and it kind of caught us by surprise.
I've noticed that you were doing some construction. I wasn't sure it was to the house or the studio.
Yeah, to the house. We've been working upstairs. Paul is currently unemployed, although it looks like he may have a lead on a job. So he's been really gung-ho on fixing house projects and stuff. So we're renovating it was an old house. I think I bought it like 6 years ago, and the upstairs I never properly wired it, and it had no insulation. So Paul gutted all the walls, and they did electric, and we're doing insulation next week. And then you add this dormer window, because otherwise you hit your head when you walk up the stairs. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited.
It's going to be like a new house.
Yes. So,
do you still have your studio in Brooklyn?
I do. I have a small studio there, although unfortunately I haven't been able to actually go there for, 2 months.
Sure.
But it's in the same floor where you visited me. I've had so many studios on that floor in the past 10 years that I've been there, but I moved down the hall, and then I got like a bigger space, and then when I decided to move up here full time, I divided it, so I rent out the other side to a young artist couple. So I have a very small space, but I really like having it there. I was teaching at Parsons the last two semesters, so going down to the city one day a week to teach, and then occasionally spending a few days. So it's kind of like a home base, and I mean, there's like it's mostly art storage, but good to have a place with a fridge and internet, and I can get some work done there if I need to.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've created a studio for yourself now upstate, right?
Yes. Yes. So that was kind of one of the reasons I chose this. Someday I really want you to come visit me up here. I would love to
have
you.
Thank you. I would like that.
Because I'm a stone's throw away from Liz.
Uh-huh.
So
we'll make that happen as soon as life returns to something.
Right, when life returns.
Whenever that might be, yeah.
No rush, but if you ever visit her, make sure you come visit me too.
Thank you. Thank you, I will. So what have you added to the new studio that you haven't had before? Anything?
Well, I mean, it's nice. It's its own, renovated like a two-car garage. And one of the best things is really that, when the weather is nice, I can just expand into the driveway and, use the outdoors as my studio too,
mm-hmm.
which is like hugely wonderful for me when I can do that, when I'm, pouring concrete. For example, it's really best to be done outside.
mm-hmm.
I'm like staring out the window looking at birds on the bird feeder. And I have a creek that goes through the property, like kind of the border of the property is a creek. And it's very, very, very beautiful. And it's just nice. Like I've never had a yard before. And be able to start gardening and stuff has been really wonderful. So, yeah.
Well, it must feel good because nature is such a big part of your artistry anyway.
Yes.
So to be immersed in it, it must just be inspiring, I would think.
It is inspiring.
Good.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back in time.
Yeah.
And ask you to tell me a bit about the beginnings. How and when did art begin to enter your life?
Great question. let me think. So I always liked kind of drawing when I was a kid. I was tracing things and then drawing things and, doodling and always really loved like art classes and I don't know, like when I, it was funny because when I, and then when I was in middle school and I started painting, I was really into color and all this, and my, you know, my teacher was very positive. And I just remember, and I believe it was either sixth or seventh grade that I decided I'm going to go to college and major in art. I just decided that kind of early on, like I loved it. And I told my dad that and he said, no, you're not. And I got upset, but whatever. But it was, but then I decided that in high school I was not going to take any art classes because I figured that in college I, that's all I would be taking. So I would just work on the side, you know, and mostly drawing and painting. And then, yeah, so I thought I would, you know, kind of major. I thought I, because my dad wanted me to, you know, have a job. So my plan was originally to go to school and then major, or to be a design, a graphic design major. So I was interested in being a graphic designer because I felt like that was a job. And then when I went to Syracuse, I'm not really sure why I chose Syracuse, but I felt like I had a good art program and it also had sort of, it was a liberal, you know, it wasn't just an art school. I didn't really want to go to just art school. So I chose Syracuse and it was wonderful. And then I kind of accidentally, like, you know, especially when I took my first painting class, like everyone takes the same core classes freshman year. And my sophomore year, I took my first painting class and I just remember like staying in the studio all night painting, you know, just loved it so much. And the next semester I'd actually chosen, you know, I think advertising design as my major. And within like the first 2 weeks, I realized that wasn't the right thing for me. So I switched into painting, not really knowing what I was going to do in terms of a job, but just being like, well, you know, as long as I have a portfolio, something will happen. So, yeah, I guess the rest is history.
So when did you depart from painting? As we know painting.
Well, I mean, I think about this too. It's interesting because I wonder what would have happened. Like if I had been, say, a photo major, I think things would have been quite different. I mean, I never even considered photo. But when I was a, you know, my professor, my painting professor, Sharon Gold at Syracuse, she's like amazing. She, you know, introduced me to conceptual theory. She was talking to us about feminism and about, you know, reading work and really talking about, you know, how you could look at artwork and kind of read it like you would a text and talk about the image. And it was a way of talking about art that kind of anyone could apply to any kind of art. And it really wasn't medium specific. So I found a lot of freedom in that. I was really interested immediately in like things that were 2D and 3D or painting and sculpture or things that were mixing over categories. And in my program, that was very allowed. So, like, I never had anyone ask me, well, that's not a paint, or, you know, give me a hard time because what I was doing wasn't painting. I sort of immediately went into, I was taking welding classes and printmaking, and after maybe one semester of really just painting, I was, like, starting to collage, bring in text, bring in images, and it really never stayed in the realm of what I would call traditional painting.
And when did the camera enter? I mean, had you been playing with a camera all along, or did you make your way to it?
So, funny thing is that, like, so I think I, you know, I'm sure I've talked to you about this, but one, you know, moving to Syracuse, moving to the East Coast from Colorado, one thing that really stuck with me are these backpacking trips. So, like, starting when I was in sixth grade, my family, me and my, you know, my mom and dad and brother and myself would do these week-long backpacks in the Rocky Mountains. The first one is Rocky Mountain National Park. We started at Grand Lake and went up Northeast Inlet Trail. And those trips, like, I mean, at the time, I think it felt like torture, you know, like, oh, I have to go with my friends and go out with you. And my dad would weigh our backpacks and print out a list of what we have to bring. And it was intense, but it was like, so every summer, probably for six or seven summers, we did that. And we just got into some amazing, you know, one of the ones I remember the best was one into the Flat Tops Wilderness. And just like after you've hiked 3 or 4 days, you're just in such a remote place. And at the time, like, we would have a camera on the trip, but I don't even know, it would be passed around from family member. So, like, you know, we'd take photos, but it might be my dad, it might be my mom, it might be me. And then at the end of the summer, my dad would choose one that was the best in his mind, and he would blow it up, and that would be on the wall. So my photos of childhood and family are, like, there's no people in them. They're all, like, mountains and rivers and lakes, right? Mm-hmm. So when I moved to Syracuse, carrying around these photos from hikes. Now they may have been ones I took, or they may not have, but those photos started entering my work even in undergrad. Images from Colorado and the landscape, and I was silk screening that, or like transferring them with Xerox transfer onto fabric and dipping it in wax, and so those landscape images were coming in already.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as me taking the images, like, you know, I think I did take photo classes at Syracuse and black and white and color and learned to print in the darkroom and really enjoyed that. So maybe that kind of started me, although a lot of those were assignments and weren't necessarily the landscape route shooting in Syracuse. So then, yes, like me, the photographer in Colorado, it's funny because I always am like skeptical to call myself a photographer because it's like just one of the tools I use. So it did take me a while to sort of get better at being, I think, taking photographs.
And is there a history to the camera you use?
So the camera I used for a long time was just my mom's camera that she gave me, 35mm. And then 2006 or 2007, my ex-boyfriend bought me a medium format camera for Christmas, like used one. And then once I started using that, I really loved it. Now at that point, I'd already been printing in the dark room. So one thing that happened is like in grad school, I was again, like kind of carrying around these photos from Colorado and working in some in small form, but I was also making these like room installations that you walk into. I really wanted to make something kind of big, and I learned how to build walls. And the very culmination of my MFA program, I made these extrusion pieces that were merging photography and sculpture for the first time. And that kind of clicked for me. And then I thought, wow, there's a lot of potential. Like I kind of looked at, I asked, how can a landscape photograph be contemporary? And also, why are all these rules surrounding photography, and why is photography treated separately than any other medium? Like, I didn't understand that. And at the time, even in the Village Voice, like, the gallery listings, there was photo and then galleries. So I sort of saw that as an opening and was really interested in that. And that was probably in, like, 2003 or 4.
Do you ever go back and look at the old work with fresh eyes, contemporary eyes?
Oh, man. I wonder if I can. Well, it's interesting because I do, you know, I show when I give my lecture, I start with work for my thesis show and a couple of little ones before. So I do go back that far. And I still enjoy those extrusions, kind of, you know. I mean, they're none of them exist anymore.
But do you identify with elements in that early work that have persisted in your work all along?
I think that there's like, it's sort of fun. I'm not sure like if this answers your question, but I was thinking the other day of like trying to remember some of those photos that were on the wall when I was a kid, you know, mm-hmm. and then looking back at them and being like, they're not really even good photos. They're actually pretty bad. So you kind of look back and say, oh, wow, that's a pretty crappy photo or something.
But maybe the content.
Yes, but the attachment. And I remember all those hikes and those places, you know,
mm-hmm.
so it really brings
mm-hmm.
me that to there.
Mm-hmm.
Even just talking about it now.
Kind of part of your DNA.
Yeah, and I think that I mean, that's the thing is, like, especially these days now, like, that we're in quarantine, I'll just start traveling in my head to places that I've been and just remembering them. It's funny. It's like, oh, remember that time, you know, and just going. And but that's something I love about working with this landscape image is people bring to it their own personal experiences, you know, and they can touch on that. And that's something I was really interested in. Like, I purposely really starting kind of an undergrad, like, didn't want to use the figure in the work because I felt like using a figure was placing it too specifically to kind of a type or a person or, you know, all the various things you read into, like, a person. So I've sort of never used a figure in the work. I wanted the viewer to be the figure.
In the landscape, figure in the landscape.
And that the landscape could be kind of open to any kind of person, like any age and any, you know, they would all have a different experience to bring to it. But I love that idea of having the landscape be a sort of common ground.
Well, it seems to me the way that you use the photograph and combine it with industrial materials, you are offering the viewer a chance to connect through familiarity, through patterns, through color, textures that are within the photo paper and the way that you utilize it.
Yeah.
So I find that really actually fascinating. I want to ask you about your studio because I remember visiting your studio in New York, and I left and had the sense that I had visited a laboratory. So I wanted to talk to you about how you would characterize your studio and what goes on there.
Yes, I love that. And I think that is also something that I find continually interesting about photography is that it is kind of has this like origin in science and, oh, how do we make an image appear on this paper and this sort of like chemicals and this sort of sunlight. And part of it is to me is like, yeah, there's science, but it's kind of magical. So I think there's, you know, an understanding, it's always a learning from the material by really observing it, testing it, pushing its limits, like test, trial, error, like, can I fold this? Like, how, in for many years, that inquisition was like centered on the C print. And part of the reason I, like those were the first works in grad school, they were digital prints. But when I graduated and I was out in the world, I like couldn't really justify spending all that money for like one giant digital print. And so that's when I started, you know, after many, you know, ways of thinking about it, I actually went back to the darkroom and started printing. And it was cheaper because it was $14 an hour. So the materials were then, I felt opened up, like I could play with them. So in the studio, I would, you know, print a bunch of photos and bring them back, and then I could rip it, play, you know, test, and it really opens it up because I think the other thing I'm really interested in is breaking down this preciousness. You know, there's a preciousness in the art object, but I think especially with photography, this sort of preciousness of the photograph and like why, you know. So I would like, I have like for many, many years just like kind of like really trying to figure it out almost from the inside out. So it's definitely like a science lab. And also when I started working with concrete, I realized I had to take really good notes because I had some early discoveries and I didn't keep track. And then I really spent a better part of 6 months like trying out a brand of this brand and how long does it sit, 24 hours or 48 hours. And I had to really like, yes, be a scientist about it.
I remember that you were in the midst of testing different concretes when we met.
Yes.
The other thought I had after leaving was I just saw you as so courageous. You were unafraid to experiment, and you used the word play, and to take risks and learn from those risks. And so when I think about artists and play and risk-taking, I often go back to that moment in your studio because I felt that so powerfully. I wanted to ask you if there was or has been a transformative moment in the development of your work, a specific one?
Hmm.
Kind of alluded to it moments, you know, leading up to what you're now producing, but I wondered if there was something specific.
I mean, I think that there are sort of like various, there's maybe like little mini milestones.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I was just thinking of was the first artist. So to back up a little bit, I think I told you, or you maybe saw on Instagram, like the first artist residency that I did at my parents' house, because I wasn't getting accepted into any residencies. So that was the first one I did, and it was like very important to me. I actually, and weirdly, you know, during the residency, I was kind of making, you know, making works. I was sort of just going through the motions, sort of, but then I'd have these moments of clarity. And when I came back from that, that's when I started printing in the dark room. And I saw that as a way that I could kind of break out of this preciousness. And then when I got into my first real artist residency, it was at Santa Fe Art Institute. And I remember being there and I was working on some collages or something and like just had this moment where I was like hesitating and I just was like, you know, trust yourself, just trust yourself. And it was like this crazy, like, release of a barrier. Like, I suddenly was like, yes, do whatever you want. You know, it was kind of like, I'm allowing me to trust myself and my decisions in the studio. Because it's like, you kind of don't really, you're not really aware of all these barriers you place on yourself. But at that moment, it felt like, okay, you know, just do it. Do what you want. Trust yourself. And it felt very powerful. So that was one moment, and that was, you know, 2009. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's just so many things along the way, like even doing the residency at Skowhegan or for various, you know, that was the first time I had a studio kind of in nature, and that was what was the impetus to get this place upstate is because I loved that, like, to be so close and to slow it down when you're outside. And it changed the way I took photographs because, when I was, like, repeating a walk, I would notice things, and then I realized I could take any photo, and it could then be work. It didn't have to be this vista. It didn't have to be this landscape, and it kind of opened up, and it freed how I shoot. So that was a moment.
Tell me about the interplay of the photograph with these heavy industrial materials. Where does that come from?
I think I think like once I started work, you know, I think some of it is like this kind of yin yang or like I'm a Gemini. So I think sometimes it's always like one and the other and you want this balance, right? Like, so the work always has this, for me, the work always has to have this line where it's not just one thing. It's kind of, it isn't just, you know, I would say before, it isn't that, you know, nature's good and human is bad or something. It's like, it's complicated. Like, there's pros and cons in both ways. So the work kind of tries to encompass this idea of, like, a balance and a complication where, you know, maybe there's one element that's sort of balancing and the other element is sort of chaos. And so often geometry will enter as a kind of, like a hold or something, like something to sort of balance out what can be on the other side, a kind of like endless chaos or beautiful chaos of nature, you know? So I'm interested in like, or, you know, the fact that there is like there's like a mathematical number that explains the buds on a tree and how they, you know, that blows me away. I think there's that kind of science. But then when you're out in the world, you don't think of that. You just are like, ah, you know, you're like experiencing it. So that interplay between maybe the body and the mind or reason and magic or something like that kind of, it was kind of back and forth. So the industrial materials, I mean, I think they, on one hand, is grown from what would a line be to then a pipe. And thinking of having lived in New York City for 20 years and these, you know, being fascinated by just watching how the infrastructure is built, concrete, the steel pipes, you know, I'm really interested in that, or even just architecture sites or their building sites. I would just, they're fascinating to me. So something about that, you know.
I had the experience in seeing your work. I had been living in two environments. I lived in the urban environment in New York, and I lived in the mountains of Colorado. And after being in your studio and seeing your work, learning about your work, I suddenly would walk the streets of Manhattan and see them as canyons, buildings. And so I thought, wow, she's brought my two worlds together. I think of the canyons of Colorado in line with the canyons of New York City and those big concrete buildings. So
I love that.
You know, it pulled me right in, and it really made sense of my two worlds then. Where does drawing fit into your practice?
Interesting question. I mean, it sort of depends on, I mean, I do sketch a lot in terms of like thinking of forms and ideas and sort of like figuring it out kind of way. But oftentimes, like, I consider a piece to be almost a drawing or a sketch when it's something that sort of fastens, I don't know, like there's a piece where I mounted the, I don't know if you have this, there's like a, it's like a photograph, and then there's a colored paper on the back and these cuts, and it's folded, and those feel like drawings to me. And even the photograms where I'm working in the dark room and then taking this image. So there's aspects that feel like drawing to me. Even the observation, I mean, thinking about how in the process of drawing something, you're really, really looking at it, you know, like you're kind of, your eyes are stuck on this thing. So I think I can kind of do that. I think when I'm shooting, that is also happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. I understand. Do you journal or keep notebooks?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think you saw some. I've been keeping notebooks since I was 16. So
yeah.
We revisited all my storage, and I have like boxes of them. So
I'm so glad you still have them.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that you keep tabs with them and go back and reflect on them once in a while. And I know you're doing artist books as well.
Yeah.
So
I love books.
I wanted to ask you, I know that you show in American galleries and European galleries.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you if and how those experiences differ.
You mean the actual shows themselves, or?
Well, you're interacting with a European gallery and American gallery. You're interacting with a European audience, American audience. Is there a difference?
It's kind of interesting. It's like Grimm is so Amsterdam. It's like it's been great for me to sort of experience these different cities and sort of be there and in person. I think there's a difference in sort of maybe their approach to my work or something. Like it's interesting to see the response. I get a lot of questions from like students or like grad students in Europe who are like writing their thesis, you know? But I don't know. I mean, I think it's like because New York City is so international, I don't necessarily like feel a difference.
So you don't see any distinguished difference between the two, even with the collector base?
I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, I guess my experience is really more with, like, the individuals, and which has been wonderful. I mean, Grimm, for example, has been incredibly supportive, wonderful gallery to work with for me for many years. And Christoph Gaillard also. That one's a little more tricky because the language barrier is a little bit more pronounced, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I don't think, like, I can't say as in terms of like the reception of the work. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, think about it some more, but I was just curious.
Yeah.
And then I wanted your thoughts on the internet in the digital age and showing your work. But of course, being in photography, you're probably much more comfortable with the digital age. But in general, where do you fit in?
Oh man, this is a good question. Also, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, recently, because to me, it's very important that my work is, you know, first and foremost, interesting to see in real life, right? Like, I want the real thing to be compelling, because I think there can be work that looks good on a computer and doesn't in person. But then I'm very aware that so much of my work, especially works that don't no longer exist, only now exist in images. And these images are transferred, you know, through the internet and collected and Instagrammed. And it's kind of amazing an idea can translate in that way. But for me, it's really important that primary source is like real. So that's why, you know, I think I may have told you this, but like there was a moment, I mean, this is a little bit of a digression, but like there was a moment after Scallion in maybe 2010 or 11 where I was like, oh, I saw a Ken Burns documentary and there's these images of the Grand Tetons. And I really was like, this is amazing. And I thought I could just download images. Now, you know, these days I was in Flickr, it was pretty popular. I was like, I could just find an image on the internet. Why do I have to go there? But then it was like, after looking for a day or two, I realized, no, I need to go to the Grand Tetons, and made the plans, went with my parents next summer, you know. So it was like that moment where I was like, it's important to me that I go to these places and I take the work for whatever.
Well,
that
it's
means.
A physicalness too, of being in the
yes.
presence.
Yes.
So physical. And with your work and the scale of a lot of your work now, it needs to be felt.
Yes.
And you can't sense scale so easily on the internet, I don't think.
Yeah. So
and texture as well.
That is, I think, a challenge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it is still important. I mean, but I like it's a challenge, but yet that's why I think it's also kind of exciting when you know, you still go through all that work and go to the place and make the work, but then the image of it then continues in this whole other life, you know?
Right.
So,
what advice would you give graduate students about studio visits?
About studio visits?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, like, the more you do, the better you'll get at them. So practice on your friends, have them come to you, and you go to them. I mean, it's interesting because I've personally gone through a lot of, you know, I used to be super nervous, of course, when you have a studio visit, to then being almost like, almost not caring enough sometimes in the more recent, like not really recently, but it's, I don't know. It is a little bit, it's always a little bit scary, I think. But just, you know, I think one thing is like, you might, you know, it's sort of like your brain might, you know, all you know about your work, but when someone comes over, they don't. So maybe like deciding what they're looking at and kind of organizing a little bit. I don't know. It sort of like depends on the artist, whether or not it's a sort of this is how I am, or you're really showing work for something specific. But
it sounds like you're flexible, that you don't have a set routine.
I don't have a set routine. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's always like a little bit also depend on who's coming over too. Is mm-hmm. it a person you know? You have a relationship with them? Is it a stranger? Do you know why they're coming over? Because all those things are like, you know, and maybe you get ultra prepared. I mean, I found it helpful. I actually, especially now that my studio, you know, lately, like a lot of studio visits, I don't actually have work to show because it's maybe too large or in storage. So it was actually for an application for a Guggenheim grant, because if you apply to photography, you actually have to send in prints. So I like printed a lot of my work in like pretty large format on very nice paper, and I did not get the grant, but those prints, I actually used them in my studio visits, and I found that very handy, like very large, nice prints of the installations, you know, mm-hmm. or other works. And I kind of,
yeah.
well, you know, for people to like walk through those prints in hand, I feel like is a good it's sort of more interesting than just like pulling up a computer screen.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are these MFA exhibitions, which graduate students work about and fret about, and then the work is hung and an audience comes in and people are buying work. And then it seems you fall into an abyss. And I'm just curious if you would speak about the MFA exhibition, the selling, and then you enter the real world. You know, what advice would you give to graduate students at that point?
Well, I mean, in some ways, like, I never sold anything before. the fact that you say you're selling things in the MFA, I'm like, wow, that's cool. I certainly never did. It took me a long time to sell any of my work. But I think that I know what you're saying about the abyss, and I think that also was like a challenge I had with, you know, a few years after grad school. It's hard because you're out in the world and you have to really – you have to establish your practice and you have to do it. I kind of felt like I had to unlearn a lot of things from school and really start over. And it's scary. One thing which I did and which I continue to do, and which is incredibly helpful, is to a year or two after graduating, I ran into one of my friends, Carolyn Solis, who had graduated, and we were like talking, and, oh, you notice all these guys who graduated having all these shows. What are we doing? And we made a little studio group with five of us. We just called it the Lady Studio Group. It was all female artists, and we would meet about once every month, and it was great. Like, once we did several rounds, it got really rigorous, and having a community of fellow artists that you're kind of accountable to gives you a deadline. After a first couple of rounds of being nice, you'll start getting some really helpful feedback, and those groups I've had, several of them, almost always one happening in my life. And I actually have one right now. We started upstate with four artists that are up here, and we do it by Zoom every week.
Cool.
So having a network of artists and that you trust and that you can share resources with too, and it's incredibly helpful. And then that's also you practicing studio visits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can really grant you insight you can't see when you're in your own bubble. So that's one really helpful thing.
And my final question, and we're running over time, and I'm sorry I'm keeping you too long.
Oh, that's okay.
I had an interview yesterday with another artist, and she brought up Ann Truitt's book, and I know have cited Ann Truitt as a source of great inspiration for you. Would you just comment on Ann Truitt and that book in particular?
Yes, Daybook. It's funny because I actually recommend it in that little studio group I'm in. I recommended it to the other artists just now. And apparently the audiobook, she reads it, which is amazing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, I quote from the book all the time. I think it's an incredible little piece.
Yeah. I sort of discovered her work late, but I felt like her writing, I feel like she's an amazing writer, and it's just, she captures the struggle, I think, of being an artist in this way that's just so eloquent. And the fact that she started so late in life and, you know, with all these things kind of working against her, and she just has such a clear vision. And so she's so like true to that. I find that incredibly inspirational. So I should read it. I've read the three of them, but I should go back and read Daybook again. It made me apply to Yaddo. That's why I wanted to go to Yaddo. And I did go to Yaddo. So, like, I don't know. I just find it just inspirational, you know.
Well, thank you for that. I'm going to let you go here. I will send you a transcription of this audio.
Okay.
And we'll be keeping the audio and the transcription in our archives for Syzygy, and it'll be a wonderful resource for graduate students to tap into. And I think it's really nice that we'll now have the actual voice of the artists present in the collection. So I want to thank you very much. And
I love that.
I'm going to take you up on your invitation and visit you upstate the next time I get east. So,
yeah, please take care in Colorado.
Thank you. Yeah, it's beautiful right now, as you know.
Oh,
so,
man.
Thanks for your time, and
okay.
we'll stay in touch.
Uh-huh. Take
Bye.
Care. Bye-bye. Bye.